With us in the studio, because we couldn't get him anywhere else, we have Richard Kennington and Rochelle Arbogast. Good morning.
Morning, Julia.
Good morning.
We're talking about wrong surface incidents. Does that mean you're taking off on, say, asphalt rather than concrete, or have I missed the whole point of this thing?
I said grass, man. Well,
depends on what sort of paint is on the asphalt or the concrete.
Wait. It's when they tell you to land on the orange dot and you land on the green one?
Uh-oh.
Here that's what it means. But yeah. In the outside world, it means either landing on the wrong runway, a taxiway, or even at the wrong airport. Certainly a...
Well, they all look alike, you know.
Very true.
Not all of them. It's a real problem. We're averaging one a day around the country. Yeah.
Wow.
And people don't expect that. And, of course, that's just the reported ones, right? But I think we're kind of on some borrowed time here because, as you can tell, you know, it introduces a lot of risk into the national airspace system. Absolutely.
It's that guy from Allstate.
He's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a good point because there was an incident. Where the heck was it? I forget where it was. But
probably at an airport.
It involved a Cirrus 22, I think it was, or an SR-20, and a Merlin, a commuter airliner. They had a mid-air collision because the Cirrus pilot made a kind of a wide turn.
Indeed. That was a Denver Centennial.
Denver, that's
just a couple weeks ago. I know the young female controller, a great controller, that was working those aircraft, and that was very unfortunate. But as it applies to the surface and the wrong surface operations, it applies to both arrivals and departures. Okay, so somebody coming into an airport, Rochelle gives them a visual clearance, and they mistake an airport between their immediate spot and their intended destination for the intended airport, and they land there.
In this day and age of GPS and glass cockpits and everything, you would think a problem like this would be self-solving.
Well, I guess a lot of it is guys going cross-country. It's an unfamiliar airport. They didn't necessarily study the plates to see what it looks like. They're tired, whatever.
Sure. Well, that's you would assume that. However, the vast majority of them happen at small to medium airports, many of them being their home airport, the pilot's home airport. Other factors include 95% of them are in VFR conditions. So you bring up an interesting point. Well, what about it? Why, in this day and age of GPS and all the other equipment, most of the time it's because we're not cross-checking with that equipment. We're going through the motions. We're complacent. We're doing the routine.
Yeah, you said familiar airport, home airport. What? I don't know where I am. I don't need to look at that thing.
Right.
Do we need to start putting signs on the runways? You know, paint it on that says "Land here, dummy."
No, we need to put them on there and say, this is not the airport you think it is.
Well, you might think so, but think about a couple months back. Well, actually, more than a couple months, I guess it was 2017, down in San Francisco, right? We nearly had the worst aviation accident in history when an Air Canada tried to land on a taxiway that was taken up by four other airliners waiting to depart.
Whoa.
But there's a lot of human factors involved there. Fatigue, the fact that a parallel runway was closed, the lights were turned off, adjusting their view of how the airport was. So just doing something like that isn't really going to do it. What we have to do is find the root causes and address those. Things like expectation bias, communication issues, and that sort of thing. And a lot of it's just human factors type things.
Yeah, and I think also that I point this out, and when we teach this class, is that the widths of the taxiways and the runways can also play a tricky, you know, part in pilots' eyes, because a lot of airports will close runways and turn them into taxiways. So you can't just be, oh, well, this width looks like a runway, when really it could be a taxiway. You have to really be vigilant and paying attention to lights, the markings on the runways and taxiways, surrounding what, you know, we'll have good real situational awareness whenever you're coming into an airport, because they constantly change. Airports are constantly changing. And I think that also plays a factor in the risk of wrong surface landings.
Yeah, Rochelle and I were talking about this just the other day in our class. Just, you know, pilots tend to interpret the runway as the widest, brightest surface, right? That's obviously what I'm going to.
Sure.
It's the widest, brightest. But that's not necessarily the case. And if you look at SeaTac, for example, get an overhead shot of SeaTac International, and see if you can identify which ones are the parallels and which one's the giant taxiway that runs right down the middle of them. So there's these challenges that we have to overcome. And when we first hear that, we might think, well, only dumb pilots do that, right? But it's not.
No, it's definitely not. With that San Francisco incident, they lined up for a taxiway, and in larger airports, the taxiways tend to be wider because they accommodate larger aircraft. At smaller airports, so Chattanooga specifically, because that's where I work, they turned a taxiway into a runway. And so for people who have flown into Chattanooga for many, many, many years, still have kind of that, it's that expectation bias. They're so used to one thing and that's what they're expecting, and then something's changed and they don't pay attention to that change. With my runway 220, we have two on either side of the runway, and the only thing that's different is the zero. We have pilots who are very familiar with our airport, fly in and out all the time, will still set up for the wrong runway, opposite direction, because all they see is the two and they're like, oh, I have this, we're good. Or they haven't fully listened to the ATIS and not paying attention to which runway is actually active. I've had people line up for the crossing runway when we're on 2015. They're real close. The thresholds are super close. And they think that they're setting up for 20 when really they're setting up for 15. Typically, this always happens with GA pilots. And we work a lot of general aviation in and out of Chattanooga.
So in every one of these circumstances, going back to what you said, are we cross-checking even the simplest things? Are we cross-checking our compass to make sure that the heading is lined up with the runway that we think we're landing on? And it's those things that would really help us.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a pilot, but I am a student. But just from that standpoint, no, you're not looking at the instruments. They're always telling you, keep your head out of the cockpit. So you're looking at what you think is the correct runway.
And that's why these things happen in VFR conditions, mostly because you're not paying attention to your instruments.
Right.
You're not cross-checking both.
You would think that those big numbers on the end of the runway, you know, hey, this is 15, not 10, you know, maybe
apparently
that
in her case,
that
you said the runway was 22 like -0, and there'd be like a -1, -2 or something.
It's 20 and 2, so we have 2 on one side and 20 on the other.
Yeah,
but what they're seeing is just the two.
Right, that's as far as reading's tough.
Right. Yeah. Especially for pilots.
So we get tired easy, you know, one number, that's good enough.
Speed read the
speed
runway.
Reading, yeah. Yes.
But so the anecdote to that is, well, there's a number of things, but I want to highlight a couple of things that the FAA has done recently in partnership with the National Air Traffic Controllers Association that I think goes a long way. There's two things I would check out. Number one would be a website called runwaysafetysimulator.com, runwaysafetysimulator.com. And on there, there's some really good videos, really informative, looking at real-world cases and kind of breaking them down, exploring those human factors that we talked about. And the other one would be YouTube, because, well, everything is on YouTube.
It is.
So if you go to YouTube and just put in flight deck videos, what they're doing is developing videos where from the cockpit, so that you, before you go into these airports, can get a bird's eye view, the view that you will get when you go in, and be prepared. They're really, really well done, and I recommend pilots go check it out, especially if they're going to go into an airport they're not familiar with.
Let's add the complication of night flying. How many more incidents do you see at night versus day?
Actually, if you look at the statistics, the vast majority, over 85%, happen during daylight hours.
So in the absolute best conditions possible, and we're still making mistakes.
Do you know what the difference
sounds
is?
Sounds like though? I was the pilot.
Well, the difference is at nighttime, you've got professional pilots, the guys who have been in it, you know, making a career out of it. During the day with the VFR stuff, it might be just Joe Average pilot out there just puttering around.
Right.
Again, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. So to add to that, I just want to put in there that if you are on a visual approach, I do think that it is excellent if you, kind of type into the ILS localizer, the RNAV, to the runway that you're expecting to go to, which then would give you a good indicator that you're going to the right place. I think a lot of times that does not happen, and it's an increase. They do it more at night than during the day, because a visual project, you can see everything, and you get complacent and that expectation biased, and then that's what gets you in trouble.
Yep.
Okay. Do you guys have a presence on the runway where we can learn more about this?
We do on the
runway at Oshkosh.
At the National Air Traffic Controllers Association booth just across the road from the tower. We're actually giving a presentation on this at 11 o'clock today. Come on over. We also have some other classes going on based on feedback from past years of attendees at Oshkosh. So we're trying to address their current concerns, and we have some classes built around that.
Very good. I want to thank you for joining us.
Yep.
Or thank us for joining you. One of those two. Take a pick.
Either works.
See, VFR radio mistakes. Anyway, this is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie. And this is EAA Radio.